wonder atmanas tasya yena maivatmana jita anatmanas tushatru tve vartita maiva shatruva. Trevor, would you like to read the verse?
For him who has conquered the mind of the mind is the best of sin. But for one who has conquered himself, I will be the best of sin.
You got a lot of realization of that for this one. Yes, the more you can see how you're being dragged around by your uncontrolled mind, the more your vision is actually clearing up. We think we are the masters of material existence. At least we think we're the masters of our own existence. But actually, we're being dragged around by our minds. So point number two on the board there, oh my aching mind. Now how does your mind ache? Anyone ever remember having an aching mind? A mind ache.
When you're trying to find an answer, and it's like hitting the key.
An honest person realizes that, but most people, they don't get to that point, because as soon as their mind starts to ache just a bit, they take some intoxication, alcohol, marijuana, or else they go to the movies. It's like we have a I had one Hatha yoga teacher. All day doing yoga for the body. It's very confident. Only eating organic food, vegetarian, living a simple life, all day doing physical yoga. But every week he goes to at least two movies. Because the mind is aching. There's one surprising or very interesting statement that Srila Prabhupada makes, I believe it's in Bhagavad Gita, that without some enjoyment for the mind, it is impossible to live. Can you just mention that point for a few seconds? Without enjoyment for the mind, it's impossible to live. How can that be? This will give you insights. A lot of people commit suicide. Their mind aches so much that they cannot live. You see, all material pleasure is actually a mental experience. With your mind, you visualize, oh, I'm enjoying. Therefore, even prisoners in a jail, they can still go on existing because, what? They're just in their mind, they're imagining in some, even in a small way, that they're getting some kind of taste through their mind, even though they're living in a jail cell. They're thinking about themselves in some favorable way, or they're taking pleasure in some small thing, even looking out the window of their jail cell, or generally they watch a lot of television, or talking with their mates in the jail cell. Some or other, their mind is enjoying the situation, even though it's very hard to enjoy. There's still something there. I know this is a subtle point. It's very difficult to grasp. And I was reading this point by Srila Prabhupada. You can see it takes some deep reflection. Unless the mind has at least some enjoyment, life cannot go on. You can't live. Math problems, but some people take great pleasure in that.
Yeah, and some people
but then, when you do them, when you actually finish, you get some feeling of satisfaction, right?
Well, yeah, either that you could do them, or that you've now done them, so you don't have to do them.
Right. There's the mind enjoying. Got it? The mind's enjoying that I've done it, or I'm finished. So if you can see the mind acting like that in terms of math problems, try to catch it in all other things too. Try to catch that rest of the mind.
It has to be like if you are doing something annoying, right? For example, if you're a coal miner or something,
mm-hmm.
and you're mining coal all day long and you're really unhealthy,
mm-hmm.
and you know that when you finish for the day you can go home and have a meal,
mm-hmm.
and you have money to, I don't know, look after your family.
Mm-hmm.
Does the mind have to be enjoying the whole time, or is it just, it just has to get a little bit of enjoyment every now and then?
What do you think the coal miner is doing with his mind while he's working? What do you think the coal miner is doing with his mind while he's working in the mine?
He's saying, this is really bad, I wish I was somewhere else, wouldn't it be great if I was somewhere else? Wouldn't it be great when I'm...
In other words, he's daydreaming. In other words, although he's chipping away at the coal face, working in the mine, his mind is elsewhere, right? He's thinking of home, children, wondering what his wife is doing. But then he thinks, actually my wife is not so nice, so he begins to think, you know, about some movie actress, you know, pretending that she's his beloved. That's where the mind is still trying to enjoy, you see? The mind will always try to find some pleasure. Otherwise you can't live. That's why people commit suicide. They see no hope. They don't know this, but they don't see any hope for the mind to enjoy. You see, even if you're locked in a jail cell, still, you'll try to enjoy with your mind. That doesn't mean you have to be a great intellectual to do that. Just anybody, it's natural, material existence. You think yourself into pleasure, even if it's just a little bit. Otherwise, you just go crazy. There has to be some drop of mental pleasure in everything. So much of material life goes on with the mind. It's like so much of what people call romance is mental. Did you know that? One day you meet somebody, or somebody you already knew, and just zap, you know, just... Yeah. Yeah. Or else it creeps up on you gradually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes. I'm in love. It's either, you know, overnight, boom, wow, yeah. Or else gradual. It's all a mental affair. And similarly, when people fall out of love, it's either overnight or gradual. One day, Carrie may tell you about her educational experience. Yeah. The other person's thinking, you know, everything is great, you know, comes back to his beloved and, you know, thinking everything is just rosy, and then she tells him, by the way, guess what? This deer? Bye-bye. Why? It's just not happening anymore. But just... A few days ago, you were telling me that I was the only one, I was the greatest. Yeah, I know, but, you know, just things have changed. It's a mental affair. The mind is so flickering and so whimsical. One day people are in love, the next day they're falling out of love. Or it happens gradually. You start noticing. You know, that person... It doesn't seem like there's that same old zip in our relationship. It's the mind in contact with the illusory energy that causes all these mirages. Therefore, you have to train your mind to be in contact with Krishna's spiritual energy. So, what I'm trying to do in this class is very subtle. I'm trying to give you some notion of the trickery of the mind and how the actual imagination of enjoyment takes place in the mind. It's a very subtle thing. But you start watching yourself, watching it happen. Krishna consciousness is beyond both the physical and the mental. So people can easily understand when their body is doing something, but they don't understand when their mind is doing something. In other words, so much of our material experiences is going on through the mind. I think myself a certain way, therefore I'm going to act that way. Can you grasp that, Sean? That's why someone like you who knows a bit of Krishna conscious philosophy and is actually living a simple life, still, you may find yourself absorbed in material existence because of the mind. The mind tells you, you need a certain amount of space around you. You need a certain amount of autonomy. You need certain circumstances. It's only the material energy can mercifully provide you. Right? That's what goes on, right? You need to be your own boss. No one should tell you what to do. But you are you. And then Maya tells you, and you are meant for me. yes, that's right. My mind needs certain space around it. My mind needs certain things. So this way we all become victimized by the mind. And you catch your mind acting that way sometimes, Emma? It just goes, phew, it runs, right? Okay, hey, Emma, think this. It goes the other way, like a UFO, you know? That way. Think that. Oh, yes. Now, think this. Oh, okay. This is why we have to be attentive to chanting Hare Krishna. Otherwise, we'll be just totally run ragged by our minds. So, would you like to read the purport? Emma, would you like to read the purport?
Okay. The benefit that you think that for you to control the mind, the Lord's maker of brain and discharging the human mission. Unless the mind is controlled, the effectiveness of greater to show. It took me away from time. And if you cannot control his mind, you will always have the greatest enemies. And that is the last thing that Krishna must do. The constitutional condition of the living entity is to carry out the orders of superior. As long as one man remains an unconquered enemy, one has to serve the dictations of lust, anger, terror, illusion, etc.
Yes. As long as the mind remains an unconquered enemy, one has to serve the dictations of lust, anger, avarice, illusion, and so forth. Catch yourself as the mind tries to get you to do that. I will not serve Krishna. I will not engage in devotional service. Then, what will you serve? You'll serve lust, anger, greed, illusion. I remember one. I should try to get the words to this song. I've got to be me. Whether I'm right, whether I'm wrong, whether I find my way or I don't find it at all, I've got to be me. Total ignorance. I've got to be me. I've got to be free. And people, they think this is art. Crazy words. Whether I'm right or whether I'm wrong, whether I find my way or I don't find it at all, I've got to be me. I've got to be free. People listen. Very nice song. That is the culture of nescience or ignorance. That shows you. You're serving the dictations of lust, avarice, illusion. And you don't care. Whether I'm right or whether I'm wrong, whether I finally or don't find it, what does it matter? I'm me. Reminds me of one person in the Orient. One of my Tai Chi teachers there. I asked the person, "Who are you?" The teacher, "I am me." I said, "What's me? Me is me. I am me." "Where is me? Me is here." "Really? Inside the stomach? Inside the lungs? Where's the me?" "And what is the me?" Ignorance is so thick. Go on reading, please.
"But when the mind is conquered, one voluntarily agrees to abide by the dictation of Krishna as your body. For such a thing you have ego and karma. Real yoga practice entails moving from that one thing you have and then following the dictation. One effect of Krishna practice is the victory in which the dictation of the Lord follows the inner nature."
Mm-hmm. Any questions about that? Any questions about the last paragraph? We're just wrapping things up here.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
What does it mean to say take Krishna?
Because ultimately everything is Krishna's energy. You can relate to causal or causes directly or indirectly. Take your pick. So these last sentences are leading us to our final point. Reaching the super soul. In every little part, there is the manifestation of the complete whole. Bhagavad Gita will teach you that. Let's turn to the 18th chapter. Ishwar Sarva Bhutanam Hriday Se Arjuna Tishtas. That is page 845. You'll find out about the super soul, the Lord in the heart. Ishvar Sarva Bhutana Hriday Se Arjuna Tishtati Ramayan Sarva Bhutani Yantra Hridani Mahayoga.
Arjuna was not the supreme knower in his decision to fight or not to fight, as implied in the end of the description. Lord Krishna instructed that the individual is not alone. The supreme personality of Godhead, or being himself, Krishna, as a likewise principle, sits in the heart of the living being. After changing bodies, the living individual forgets this past day, that the super soul is a knower of the past, present, and future. Remains of it as a world of activity.
Yes. So when you change your body, you'll forget everything you did in this life, but the super soul has witnessed all that you've done. Therefore, you will get the reactions to your actions, because there is a witness. You will forget, but the super soul does not forget.
That one is the reason for the incarnation of karmic destiny.
Your karmic destiny is being meted out. Your actions have been witnessed and your destiny is being meted out.
Yeah, can you speak to all of what you tell the family?
There is a witness, a seer, an ultimate seer. Just like you are a living entity, tiny living entity, and you can see, you can observe. The complete whole also can see and observe. The ultimate source also has the ability to see and observe. You are a tiny entity, you are conscious. The supreme complete whole is also conscious. That which you are part of is also conscious.
I was just in the end that I think that the karmic law is unlimited time. Overseeing everything.
Yes, but law means lawmaker.
That's not law. Like the Bible says, quite my own people.
That's a law. That's a principle of how the universe functions.
We get down energy balance.
Mm-hmm.
Down energy balance is the stuff.
Energy means there's an energetic source. As soon as you talk about energy, you have to talk about the source of energy. So the source of energy has the power to observe. Just like you, your energy, you're not the source. Your energy, you have the power to observe. You have that power to observe because the energetic source, the complete whole, Krishna, has the power to observe unlimitedly and infinitely. But your powers of observation and mine are limited, but we are tiny. We shouldn't kind of like depersonalize the whole ultimate reality, because just as we have consciousness, the ultimate reality is also conscious. Just like we seek pleasure, the ultimate reality is also pleasure. Bhagavad Gita teaches these mysteries, the interplay between the minute consciousness and the ultimate consciousness. So we shouldn't shy away from personality and individuality in our analysis of metaphysics. Personality and consciousness are a part of metaphysics. Of course, we may have a temporary personality. This doesn't mean we don't have an original personality. It's just not like anything we know about. But that doesn't mean that in real existence, there's nothing personal, nothing conscious. It's just karmic interplay, or it's just whatever, some kind of mechanistic principle or in a psychic way. No, there is consciousness. And what's really going on in this cosmos is the interplay of consciousness. So Bhagavad Gita will focus your attention on that. Verse in the 18th chapter gives us an accurate description of what's going on in material nature. That we are situated in a machine known as this material body, and it's wandering here and there, We can go from one species to another, one planet to another, in these different machines, and that the super soul is directing the wanderings of the soul, according to our karma. So naturally, you should want to get out of this system of aimless wandering and learn what our real purpose is.
Mind to be the greatest enemy. If we actually look at our personal experience as we've grown older, we've gone through adolescence, maybe so many stages, but we are seeing things with a different perspective now, a different type of maturity. So maybe one, maybe not the best way, but one avenue in learning can be the school of hard knocks, to try and search different avenues, and sometimes you may develop knowledge. So that isn't maybe not the best way, but it seems to work.
You have to educate yourself into what is real. It's like if you're buying gold, you need to know what gold is, otherwise you could be cheated. So I come up to you with some yellow stone and say, this is gold. So it is every human being's duty to educate himself or herself in spiritual culture. And that's why we're working like this at the law, to give everyone an actual education in the principles of material and spiritual existence, so that you can choose. And Bhagavad Gita does that. It's the best book. It's like earlier we were talking about the road code I had to study for a driver's test. Bhagavad Gita is the universe code. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna acknowledges that you have your free choice. Therefore, at the end, in Bhagavad Gita, what does Krishna tell Arjuna? Now, page 847. Itite gyanam akhyatam viyad vyajalam maya vrmishyaita adasheshena yateshtasi tata karu. Want to read that, Paul, page 847?
Thus I have explained to you knowledge still confidential, the liberation from this plane of the
mystery. Yes. So Bhagavad Gita is the book of choices, and the different choices are pointed out, and what results come from different choices, and at the end, Krishna says, think about it and do what you want to do, because there cannot be any love, there cannot be supreme love without independence. You can't force it. All right. Some basic idea of what is the mind. So many people talk about the mind these days. They realize, they think that they're not the body, and they think, well, I am the mind. But according to the standard of Bhagavad Gita, if you think you are the mind, that is still the bodily conception of life, because the mind is an external covering for real self, just as the body is. The body is physiological matter, and the mind is, shall we say, subtle or psychic matter. People today, their He's kind of a little bit curious about the psychic plane after being simply absorbed in the physical plane. Now they're getting involved in psychic activity and psychic awareness. These are things to do with the mental body. But still, that is not spiritual. So, let's get some information about the mind. What actually does it do? What effects does it have? This is a very important subject matter for one who's actually serious about the most important issues in life. So we'll begin with the point number one, the mind, enemy or friend. How could my mind be an enemy? How could my mind be a friend? Any comments on that before we go further? Of course, tonight most of you know a little bit about Father McGee's philosophy. But we can ask Emma, just about reading, how would you think the mind is enemy or friend? So you're saying that your mind can drag you here and there, or else your mind can what? Okay, so we have a photo you here, we can get some information. Text 5. Udaret atmanatmanam natmanam avasadayat. Atmaiva Natmano Bandur Atmaiva Vipra Atmana. Would you like to read the translation?
None of the mother and self is a habit of mind, and not the girl and self. The mind is the thing of the conditioned side and the being used.
So the thing can go either way. It has two uses. Your friend or your enemy. So we should be very interested in this point. How the same thing can be a friend or an enemy. And how the same thing can either degrade you or deliver you. Of course, the next question would be, deliver you from what? Most people today, they don't think they need to be delivered from anything at all. as far as the point about degrading oneself with the mind, well, many people today will say, well, what is degradation? That's just a judgment. We shouldn't judge others. Anyway, a lot of that confusion is due to a lack of a real standard. And Bhagavad Gita is delightful because it gives a real standard. Now, sometimes people are afraid of that, a standard. They want no standards. Yet, if you're driving throughout Auckland, just like I had to apply for a driver's license. My American name was expired. And, you know, I had to study the road code and I had to become acquainted with certain standards. You know, and the whole give way rituals and culture, which for a foreigner is very bewildering, you know? You all, growing up, you take it for granted. But for someone coming here, this whole give way kind of stuff is, you know, it's really taxing for the brain. In order to deal with, I had to, purchase, BP gas sticks. Petrol stations, they sell all these tests, I got all 20 of them, Because it's kind of bewildering, this giveaway stuff. But, what would have been the use if I just went to the police station where they did the tests on Stanley Street in Auckland and said, I drive however I feel, according to how I feel from within. I turn in whatever way, I feel that is good for me at that moment, and I follow the stoplights whenever, they resonate with me. and I try to dialogue with the police officers when they stop me, and try to feel one another out. But the basic principle, of course, is, you know, you just drive however you like, according to how you feel, according to your own intuition. And there's no firm guidelines. There's no firm principles. There's just simply whatever you feel. And no one should judge another. You should not be judged by any other in how you drive. So I refuse to take a driver's test, because however someone thinks, whatever someone thinks is good driving, that's what good driving is. Of course, you all know that wouldn't, you know, that won't work. And the city of Auckland will not function with people driving like that. There has to be some standard. And the government sets the standard. It's like, you know, I had one question. And if I hadn't gotten those tests you can buy beforehand, I would have never learned it. This information. How much? What's the minimum amount of tread that can be on a tire? How many here know? That's what I told you. You know, if I had just read the road code manual, I would have never figured that someone would ask me that question. But because I got those tests beforehand, I was like, oh, this is going to be out. This is what they're going to ask me. I've never figured this out on my own. And also things like, I would never consider it important by reading the road code, like, you're not allowed to sound your horn except for emergencies between the hours of 11 p.m. and 7 a.m. on a road that you travel 50 kilometers per hour on. I don't know, you all may consider that's, you know, part of New Zealand life, everyone knows that's important. Not me, I. Coming from abroad, I just read it in the road code and just, oh, no one's ever asked that. No need in me memorizing it. Regardless of what I thought, there's a standard. Similarly, nature is like that. Regardless of what we feel, there is a universal standard. And Bhagavad Gita is giving us information about that universal standard. Now, some people object to that. They call it dogma. Oh, this is the Krishna way. But these same people, they don't object to traffic laws. They follow them. Now, they may try to cheat every once in a while, go through a red light or something like that. But they know that if everybody disregards the traffic laws, there'll be chaos. So they understand why traffic laws have to exist. But these same people cannot understand why there are universal laws. Why there are laws governing the mind and its effects, they can't understand. And therefore, they become very afraid of Bhagavad Gita, because it does present a heavy standard. When I say heavy standard, I mean a firm, unwavering standard. In other words, just like you got the road code book, Bhagavad Gita is the universal code book, the universe code book. So just like people spend time learning the road code, you should also spend time learning the universe code. Otherwise, what happens? You drive around without knowing the road code. Like I was telling Bhaktisiddhanta Swami here, about the give way culture and laws. And of course, you know, I've been driving for 2 years here. Whoever gets to the roundabout first, and whoever gets to the intersection first, that's it goes. That's a yank wave approaching the situation. You know, whoever gets to the intersection first, never mind. What about the signs or anything like that? Whoever gets there first, you go first. sooner or later, it'll catch up with him. Sometimes the police will be waiting to watch and see who's paying attention to at the intersection to the giveaway laws, or who knows, you may get to an intersection and say, oh, I'm here first, let me go roaring through, and you know, another car which has a right of the way may just plow right into him, you know. So, you know, sooner or later it catches up to you. So, that everybody can understand. Yes, these giveaway laws have a purpose. Everybody knows it. Because here in New Zealand, there's not a traffic light on every corner, so there has to be some kind of way to make it so that there's not chaos at the intersections, especially, you know, some of these small towns and hamlets and villages, you know, and there's intersections. There has to be a way that there can be traffic interaction without a disruption, so everybody can understand it. But why can't they understand that the universe also has codes and you can't play with them? In other words, it's not that whatever you think is all right, that's what's all right. You have to know the law book. And Bhagavad Gita is that law book. It's the main book for human beings. Because human beings have the consciousness to understand the universal legal system. Other species of life don't. Therefore, for other species of life, there's no karma. But for human beings, there is karma. Reaction. Anyone who understands the universal system of action and reaction realizes that even though something may appear good to me and to feel all right, that doesn't mean that there won't be a severe reaction in the future. Just like, you know, when you're a 5-year-old kid, you probably don't want to go to school. Yet your parents keep telling you, you must go to school for a better future. And so you go. Whether or not you get a better future because you went to school, that's another thing. But your parents tell you that. Never mind that you want to play all day now. You are 5 years old, you must go to school for your betterment. But if the child is left to its own inclinations, at the age of 5, the child won't want to go to school. The child will just want to play all day, watch television. So, we do recognize the need for sacrifice for the future in certain things. But when it comes to the ultimate issues, the most important issues, nobody cares. And that's the problem. They don't mind that they could be in store for severe reactions. Because ignorance is encasing us. We have this lethargy and dullness. That is something that's inculcated in us, instilled in us by our social atmosphere, in which everybody puts each other to sleep by talking everything except what they should talk about. That's the most prominent feature of materialistic life. Those of you who are leaving or have left materialistic life, you know, that's the most prominent thing you remember about it. People talk and talk and talk day and night about everything except what's important. All day and night the tongue is going. And nothing has any substantial purpose. Talking day and night, whether it's in shops or homes or at universities, even most intellectual professors can talk, and never understand the basic, essential issues. Who am I? Why am I here? Where am I going? But they're expert in everything else except that. And people call that civilization. But according to Bhagavad Gita, that is not real civilization. Real civilization grapples with the issues as presented in Bhagavad Gita. What is your identity? What are you part of? What is the nature of the complete whole? What is consciousness? What is the relationship between the part and the whole? So Bhagavad Gita is a reality book par excellence. But some people don't want reality. But an actual civilized human being is thirsty for reality. And Bhagavad Gita presents reality with a capital R, the supreme reality, the all-pervading reality, the original reality. So in this verse, chapter 5, we're going to learn a bit about how the mind functions in relation to the real self. Sean, would you like to read the purport?
Stephen will always be here,
Well, you don't think that someone else can read if you like.
Okay.
Paul, did I agree?
The way to tell is the next
one. Atma.
Atma?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Word Atma directs body, mind, and soul, depending on different circumstances. In the yoga system, the mind is a conditioned soul of expression. Since the mind is the central point of yoga practice, Atma refers here to the mind. The yoga system is to control the mind and draw it away from attachment to sense objects. It is stressed here that the mind must be so trained to deliver the conditioned soul to the mind and the soul.
Okay, that's all we did. So we're getting some information here. First of all, you get some Sanskrit information that the word Atma, which you see in various words in the Sanskrit, Udaret Atmanat Manam, Nat Manam Avasare, Atmaiva Yatmano Bandur, Atmaiva Ripper Atmana. So you get some basic Sanskrit information that the word Atma can refer to body, mind, or soul, depending on, of course, particular verbs. And then you find out that in the yoga system, real yoga system, not simply body, bodily calisthenics, in the real yoga system, the mind is the central point. And that the purpose of the yoga system is to control the mind and draw it away from attachment to sense objects. Now there you have the, in one sentence, you have the radical difference between material life and spiritual life. In fact, you have the theme of the argument between materialists and spiritualists. The purpose of the yoga system is to draw the mind away from sense objects. And the purpose of materialistic culture is what? To absorb the mind in sense objects. So right there you have the crucial difference. Spiritual culture teaches you how to withdraw the mind from sense objects. Materialistic culture teaches you how to submerge the mind in sense objects. Just like it's now Friday night in Auckland. Now most people, Friday night, what does that mean? It's time to submerge the mind in as many sense objects as you can find. Of course, it's not that during the week their mind is not submerged in sense objects. No. All the time it's happening. But on Friday night, you know, most people aren't working. It's party time, cafe time, theater time, cinema time. They feel Friday night is the time when I submerge my mind in the sense objects of my choice. But Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., I have to submerge my mind in sense objects of somebody else's choice. That's work. When you push your mind into sense objects of someone else's choice, it's work. When you push your mind into sense objects of your choice, that's play. Bhagavad Gita says, hold it right there. Whether the sense objects are of your choice or some other person's choice, that's not the purpose of the mind. To submerge in these things. Take up yoga and pull back the mind from material sense objects. So you see a crucial difference here in the two cultures. This is why Krishna says in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, what is night for the transcendentalist is day for the materialist, and vice versa. Let's see if we can find that verse. Yanishan Sabarbhutanam. Just remember the sense, not the English. Turning in the second chapter looking for it. Yes. Yanishan Sabarbhutanam. Page 157. Okay. Yanasha Sarvabhutanam Tasyam Jagati Sanyami Yasyam Jagati Bhutani Sanasha Pashuto Mune. Again, you might like to read the translation.
For this night, for all beings, is the time of awakening for the self-control. And the time of awakening for the beings is the night for the people.
That's good.
Introspective sage.
Once again, we have the stark contrast showing you that it's not all just one. There is distinction. What is night for some people is day for somebody else. So, Terry, would you like to read the purport?
There are two classes in the human being. One is intelligent and the other is called introspection, and the other is introspective in the way to the cultivation of self-cultivation. Activities of introspective stage will put the man in light of person's material absorbed. Materialistic persons remain asleep in such nights to retain their awareness of their realization. The introspective sage remains alert in the night of materialistic man. The sage feels transcendental pleasure in the gradual advance of the spiritual culture, whereas the man in materialistic activity has been asleep to self-realization, dreams of variety, and fixed vision, feeling sometimes struggling with sometimes distress in his human condition. The introspective man is always indifferent to materials of happiness and distress. He goes on with his self-realization activities, understood by material reaction.
Now, wouldn't you all like this? Like that last statement to apply to you? The introspective man is always indifferent to materialistic happiness and distress. He goes on with his self-realization activities, undisturbed by material reactions. Wouldn't you like that to apply to you? Really? You really want it? You sure on that? Okay, remember that. What about you, Paul? Wouldn't you really like that? Okay, remember that. Anyone else? Really?
Get a little tight for the present moment.
Requires association or guidance. Otherwise, material nature will mow you down. What about you, Daniel? It sounds a little bit intriguing.
Sorry, it's a little bit old, too fast for me to understand.
What's your native tongue? Okay, that's all right. Simply the sound vibration of these talks, even if you don't understand every word, just the sound of it is very enlightening. Soothing the soul. Trevor? Still thinking on that. Still thinking about it, huh?
No.
So, it sounds like you have a room full of persons who are eager to sign up for the curriculum. Yes? It'll only be a question of how to do it. Where there's a will, there's a way. So, you may note that in this purport, it's not denied that materialists have intelligence. It's just their intelligence is used for the wrong thing. That's why you can become easily fooled. Well, there's so many intelligent activities going on. Yes, but the purpose is useless. The purpose of our life is not to achieve comforts and make all sorts of intricate arrangements through technology and politics. The purpose of our life is to stop the cycle of repeated birth and death. To put a stop to that old process of traveling from one body to another. This material atmosphere is not our home. We are embedded in this material atmosphere, but it's not our home. Why is it that we feel so comfortable here even though it's not our home? That is the power of the deluding energy known as Maya. Therefore, we feel comfortable and at home in a place where we don't belong. That is the proof that we're being overpowered. We're living in a temporary, very dangerous situation, yet we feel everything is all right. under the influence of the illusory energy. Emma can think, oh, I'm so too young for this. Maybe first I should try to enjoy the world more, and then I can think about taking a spiritual life. And Sean can think, well, I'm just not quite old enough to to take it up, you know. I've still got some years ahead of me, and you know, I just got to go about things slowly. I'm definitely going to do it sooner or later, but I've got to go about things at my own speed. I really feel like I've got a certain amount of years ahead of me. I really feel that. Why? Do you think you have a certain amount of years ahead of you? Well, I just feel that. And then Trevor could say the same thing. Well, I'm kind of, my name is Trevor. I'm kind of a unique guy, you know. I'm creative. I like music. I'm kind of cool in my own way. Surely I've got plenty of time. Everybody thinks they got so much time. But why? The fortunate person thinks any moment this body can end. Let me use the human body to make an ultimate solution to my presence. Krishna conscious scriptures say that one of the real wonder of the world, everyone's heard of the great wonders of the world, the Sphinx, the pyramids, some tall skyscraper that you can see that can actually. In any case, according to the Krishna conscious scriptures, the real wonder of the world is just one thing. Everybody's dying at every moment, but still, people think, death won't come to me. Everybody has that foolish notion. Death won't come to me. Of course, I know everybody dies. I know I'll die too, but it's going to happen when I'm ready. At just the right moment, you know. After I live a full life, according to my own calculation, a full life, then it'll come, because I'm a good person. Everyone thinks like that. I'm too nice and wholesome to leave this body immediately. I've got plans! And surely nature is so kind, nature will allow me to fulfill my plans. We have to be sharp and catch how the illusory energy is dulling our intelligence. Why is it happening? Because we allow it to happen. We allow ourselves to be lulled to sleep in the night of materialistic activities. Meanwhile, the sage is feeling transcendental pleasure. In what? Let's describe this purport. In the middle, right in the middle of the purport. The sage feels transcendental pleasure in the gradual advancement of spiritual culture. That's what the loft is trying to do here. To provide a place where people can experience transcendental pleasure in the gradual advancement of spiritual culture. That's what we're trying to do here. It's a very noble purpose. Therefore, we need so much help in doing it. We're always overloaded here. Do we have any spare time? Alright, let's go back to page 312. Now that we have firmly grasped the principle that there is a difference, it's not all one. Oh, everybody's doing whatever they like, and it's all spiritual, man. It's all just the enlightened. It's all the Aquarian age. It's all just, you know, it's all nonsense. There is a difference. There are basically two classes of persons, not the rich and the poor, or not the whatever is the ones who have the power and ones who don't have the power. There are two classes of persons, those dedicated to the advancement of spiritual culture and those dedicated to the advancement of material culture. Take your pick. Good example. Our friend Trevor here. Since we're amongst friends. One Friday night, he was here, but then he said he had to go somewhere. Very important. So, he said, okay, I'll see you later. So I happened to go up to, let's go on and observe ways. And Ponsonby, where they had the old glue pot. Yeah. And I just walked by, and there was our friend Trevor looking through the window, transfixed, just in complete absorption, looking through the window. There was one band playing, singing songs, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. That was the name of the song they were singing. And I was saying, Trevor, how can this help anybody? In fact, this is destroying so many people's intelligence and sincere purpose in life. This music is doing so much damage. So at that time, of course, Trevor still had a lot of faith in the material energy. So he was, not so bad. I mean, it's kind of nice. I know what he told me. It's exciting. That's what materialistic culture does to us. It makes us think it's exciting to ruin ourselves. You know, just like you hear about some young teenagers jumping into a car and going joyriding. They have that term here, joyriding. The father goes away and the young kids, they take the car out for a joyride. They fill the car with all their friends and go speeding down the street, down the motorway, even though they don't have licenses, they don't know how to drive, and it's just joyriding. So they think it's a joyride, but so many times those joyrides end in disaster. Or you can think about a bunch of kids coming back from a party, and they've been drinking, and they're all happy and making merry, and they jump into a car, pile into a car, and go speeding down the road and laughing and joking. Oh, it was a great party, yeah. And then, crash. So, the illusory energy makes it seem exciting to do yourself in. Yet, when people hear about the life of a transcendentalist, when they hear about the life of a Krishna conscious person, they think, oh, how boring. There's no degraded activities. How boring. They don't know what real excitement is. Real excitement you get by studying Bhagavad Gita and discussing these topics that we're discussing now. That's exciting. Reality is exciting. So, let's continue on page 312. Now that we know that the mind should be trained so that it can deliver the conditioned soul from the mire of nescience. Your mind is supposed to pull you out of the mud. It has to be trained to do that. So, will we accept the training? That's a very important point. We may know it, but that's not knowing it according to the standard of Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, if you know something, you're acting that way. Otherwise, you don't know it. That's why Bhagavad Gita is such a powerful book. It's not really a book that you kind of can just believe in. Yeah, I believe in the Gita. Lip service, Just with your lips you say, yes, I accept it. With your actions. There's no evidence that you're accepting. Bhagavad Gita is such a possessive book. In the best way. It's the mercy of Krishna coming to you in a very personal, intense way. Ultimate reality and embracing you. Bhagavad Gita means the song of God. But not God according to what people think when they hear that word. But God in ultimate spiritual experience. Not simply some vague word, but ultimate reality, supreme love personified. That is Bhagavad Gita. Touching your soul in the very depths, filling your heart with transcendental knowledge. shaking you from within to drop your attachments to material nature and run to Krishna. That is Bhagavad Gita. Alright. We know that the mind should be trained to rescue us from illusion. Then it's our friend. Now let's read a little bit about what material existence is like. So Paul, would you like to continue reading?
The material existence brings subject to the influence of the mind and the soul. In fact, the two souls entangle the material world because the mind is involved with the false ego, which desires to rule it over the material nature.
Wait a minute right there. I desire to lord it over material nature. Would you agree that you desire to lord it over material nature?
Mm.
You do?
Well, I try not to, but yeah.
Can you give us an example?
Well, I don't know. I'm trying, if you can bring about an arrangement of material situations where you can benefit. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how to do that. Mm-hmm. It's just not natural to do it. I'm compelled to do it. Well, it sounds like a little bit. Do you want to go to a rock concert? You try it in enough minutes you can go and try and find a way to get there. And you think by manipulating material nature, like getting enough money or enough transport or whatever it is, that will make you happy.
Yes. It's a good example, trying to go to a rock concert and see, you think this is going to be pleasurable, so let me try to accumulate some money this way or that way, then I can be the lord of material nature. I was going to a rock concert, how is that evidence that you want to be the lord of material nature? Because a rock concert is provided by nature, and I want to be present there. Therefore, I will utilize this world so that I can get the means to go to that concert. And of course, when you go to school, the purpose of school, unfortunately, is not to awaken in you higher understanding. The purpose of the school is to teach you how to lord it over material nature. To give you job skills so that you can, according to your level of achievement in school, supposedly that will determine what kind of job you will get, and what kind of job you get will determine how much money you'll make, and that will determine the level that you can exploit material nature. The whole problem is you think this world is here for my pleasure, whether it's rock concerts or surfing or whatever. The world is here for my pleasure. The girls are here for my pleasure. The boys are here for my pleasure. Everything is here for my pleasure. If I just have enough money, if I just work hard enough, if I just know how to do things properly, everything is here for my pleasure. That is the desire to lord it over material nature. Things should happen my way. That's what everybody wants, right? When they wake up in the morning, they want everything during the day to go their way. Just catch yourself when you wake up in the morning. As soon as you open your eyes, catch yourself as you start to, climb out of the bed. Or even before you start climbing out of the bed, you're thinking, will this day go my way? Right? Will I have a fulfilling time today? Isn't that the way it is, son? Yeah. That's the desire to lord over material nature. How many of us wake up thinking, will this day go Krishna's way? And before you go to sleep at night, you're thinking, did this day go my way? How much should I get out of this day? Right? That's what most people think before they go to sleep at night. How many impediments happened today to my desires? How many barriers did I run into? Of course, a lot of people don't like to think about that before they go to sleep. So what do? Drink. Because they don't want to remember all the things that went wrong, all the things that didn't go according to their plan that day. So they... Or they dull their mind in other ways. They turn on the TV and just dull their brain. But a devotee of Krishna goes to sleep in peace, knowing that I did my best for Krishna's pleasure. I tried to make things happen for the pleasure of Krishna, the complete whole, because I am the tiny part, the tiny servant of Krishna. And that skill you can pick up by education. Otherwise, without the education, we're floundering. You know that, right? You're floundering. Without that practical education and the association needed to do it, you're floundering. Now, Trevor, he's just realized. Floundering. Going nowhere. Going nowhere fast.
Therefore, the mind should be trained so that it will not be attracted by the glitter of material nature. In this way, the devotee soul will be saved.
The mind should be trained so that it will not be attracted by the glitter of material nature. Now, that is a totally revolutionary statement. Society is not teaching that. Society teaches you how to be attracted by the glitter of material nature. So you see, there is a contradiction going on between the life of a materialist and the life of a spiritualist. These are very important points that show us we have to take a stand. You just can't walk around talking the spiritual talk. Spiritual life means to actually take a stand, a position. No. I will accept training so that my mind will not be attracted by the glitter of material nature. Just like if you, let's say, you're walking down Queen Street, the downtown shopping center and all the different arcades. You notice how your mind's attracted. You notice that? This shop window, that shop window, clothing stores, music stores, CDs, sports shop, so many things in your mind. Just that's why people, they like to walk in, you know, the central business districts of cities, because they think it's happiness being pulled in so many directions, so many smells from restaurants, sounds and music, sights, you know, store windows to look into, and they just, you know, they feel it very stimulated. They don't know that's misery. That they are meant to be absorbed in much better things. So here at the walk, we try to provide the real attraction, the pure attraction of Krishna, not the glitter, not the false glitter of material nature. Go on.
One should not degrade oneself by attraction to sense objects. The more one is attracted by sense objects, the more one becomes entangled with material existence. The best way to disentangle oneself is always to regain familiar Krishna consciousness. Delusion.
Yes?
As you emphasize this point, i.e., that one must have this, was also said.
Mana eva manushanam karanam bandhamoksha vandaya vishaya sarva mutjai nirvishayam mana.
The man, mind is the cause of bondage, and mind is the cause of liberation. Mind absorbed as sense objects is the cause of bondage, and mind attached with sense objects is the liberation. Therefore, the mind is always engaged the mind, which is always engaged in Krishna consciousness.
So any questions about this point? The mind, enemy or friend? You have to draw the line. Well, that means sometimes you're acting properly and sometimes you're acting improperly. So this verse is helping us come in touch with why we have a mind and what it's doing. Why we have a mind and what it's doing. You know, sometimes you have this feeling that, oh, I feel like doing this. Oh, I don't feel like doing that. That's the mind. So that mind has to be trained to act in such a way that